Getting ready to head to Pittsburgh, and just like I've mentioned many times, with the familiarity of when you've been in the league for quite a while, have a lot of respect for Todd Haley, Mike Tomlin, and then had an opportunity to coach Mike Munchak and be on two different staffs with him when he had to dumb down as a player, know-it-all player, and become a coach, know-it-all Hall of Fame player, and become a coach. I think he's arguably the best offensive line coach in the National Football League. And I've had a chance to be with him when he made that swing from being a very successful player, a very successful businessman, to coming in and starting from the ground floor up and move up into being an outstanding offensive line coach, a head coach, and now an offensive line coach again. And then Danny Smith, the special teams coordinator, and I go way back from when I was at the Bills. I hired him to be our special teams coordinator, took him to the Redskins with me also. I've known him very well and have a lot of respect for that staff on what they do, how they do. And one of the things that you see, and it can't be this simple, it's not that easy in our National Football League, but the continuity there on how long those guys have been there. And even from the transition of Dick LeBeau, of being there as the coordinator, who was my assistant head coach, and you know, he goes back to Pittsburgh after we both left Buffalo, and what they've transitioned and how they're playing defense from Dick. So it's always good to see the continuity of them being same as, but they're very well coached, and you know, their players buy into the system, buy into what they're doing from a culture standpoint, and it'll be a good test again defensively for us. Questions?
When you look back to what happened with Carl on the offsides, can you just explain?
Well, I mean, those are things that, you know, I think our head coach, one of the things I always like to continue to segue off of some of the things he says so it doesn't become my idea, but he constantly talks about the details. And, you know, we specifically have a camera that takes a shot of every alignment that we do. Even this week, it's been even a more paramount or better listened to when a coach is talking about that vision of how you line up. And what seems like a simple thing sometimes becomes, okay, a very, very compound mistake that takes points off the board. And as you saw what Carl did, and he's a very detailed, conscious person. Sometimes, you know, when I first got here, he was extremely robotic. And all of a sudden, you know, he's now relaxed enough to cut it loose and do the things the way you have to do to play at this level. You can't have any restrictions. You can't be waiting for things to happen. You know, he made an adjustment from an inside stance to an outside stance and barely got in the neutral zone. You know, one of the things, we were in the neutral zones. But here's another thing about how the league has come. Those are warnings. The first one's a warning. So they didn't. We were offsides, and it took points off the board, and it was magnified to the point where our guys see how detail-conscious you have to be. It was unfortunate. And it's not something that, you know, him would ever want to do.
They barely. It didn't look barely from our perspective.
Where was it? How much? Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that you're constantly doing from a here's one of the things which is good from your all sides. How many of you guys take a look and see how many offensive tackles are illegally aligned that the National Football League never, ever, ever calls? And as I talk and we talk to officials before every game, they nod and go out there and disrespect us by not calling that. And there was a classic case of, yes, Carl was in the neutral zone. And, yes, the offensive tackle was aligned illegal. But that's just what happens. And we have to take those other things out there. We have to do what we have to do. And we were wrong on that.
Did you ponder not putting him back in the game?
Well, after that play, I mean, we always take him out. And we take him out. You know, no, you can't do that. Who are you going to put in? Simon? You? You know, I mean, who am I going to put in? You know, I got to put him back in. But one of the things we've done since I've got here is that in practice and in a game, boom. Okay. And one of the things that a lot of coaches are fearful of is they think the players have control of that. Not with me. Not with me. Okay? I decide who plays. I don't pick the people who are here, but who plays on game day, yes. And those are things for understanding. You know, timeout, when I was growing up, there wasn't such a thing. But there was a timeout to reflect and go back and do right.
So he had not been warned at all before that?
No, not to our knowledge. And what happens on those things are, when those things go on, is our sidelines. When a warning occurs, typically it comes to us when they've done it, and then we go up and down the sideline. And Clyde Simmons does a very good job of that. And they'll come to me and or the head coach and talk about that. And then, boom, we go over to the sideline. I said, look, how about this? If the other team is called for it, we go up and down the sideline and alert when those things are happening, because it's going to happen to us too. And we were wrong. We were. And we got to do better.
Along the lines of everybody's thinking about how next year might be better, what's your vision for next year for this franchise?
Well, you know, the vision right now is that, in all honesty, you know, I can't say, you know, like Bill Belichick does, you know, we got to play Pittsburgh first. And the vision, you know, we'll attack, and I'll slow down to start thinking about that when it's all over. But at this time, I can't slow down to think about that. There's still so much on there. And, again, when you take holidays and you take other kind of stuff, we don't. I don't. And when that happens towards the off season, we'll sit down with the planning process. That starts on Monday. The head coach has an elaborate thing that we go through on Monday. I've got a even lot more elaborate stuff that from the defensive side of the ball that we'll start to do, you know, with the staff and everything. But I can't visualize that till Monday.
Sure. What's been built so far this year?
You know, one of the things I would hope that you all would see, and I think you can ask the players today. Have you guys already talked with the players? You're going to go in later? Okay. One of the things is that, and I don't do this very often, but I wanted them to see some of the amazing things that it accomplished this year statistically. And I put up about 10 or 12 pages. I know that Peter's got some of that stuff if you'd like to talk to him. But, you know, since Cleveland Browns have come back to Cleveland, there are things that we've done that's best in the history of the organization, especially from a run front. Some of the things we've done on yards per play, tackles for losses, you know, just basically in the run game too. But also, you know, there's a couple of things that you'll see in the pass game on how we've affected those type of things. Now, with all that being said and done, is we all have to improve on all of that. But I wanted those guys to see some of those things that they'd done from a team standpoint. And then there's an awful lot of guys. You know, we have some leaders in the National Football League on this defense that are pretty sharp, you know, some of the things they've done on how they're playing defense. They're number one, number two, number three, number four, number five in the league on doing some of these things. And, again, you know, Peter's got that information, so you guys can have that when you see. And I typically don't do that because it's all about the opponent when we're in the meetings, and the meetings are an extension of the field. But I reflected a little bit on that in the meeting today, and it was fun for me to see their eyes get big because most of them were not aware of that. We don't have time to be aware of that. We got to go on.
A few plays after the massive play, you guys gave up the 40-yard screen pass.
Screen, yeah.
It seems like that's been a problem.
And two screens. And, you know, one of the things that we've done before in the past on places have been very good screen teams. And then those two plays got away from us, from the dominance of the game. And, you know, you wish you had those plays back. And you know, those guys, as soon as they're over, you know, they see it's something that's taken place early in the year that we corrected, and they just had a hesitation. And we've named a couple of those exact calls that we made in that. You know, I've teased them this week by naming them somewhat derogatory terms so they'll remember the next time that were to happen, because those are screen calls, and we just didn't execute it. And that's the part of it, you know, regardless of whatever the scheme is, okay, you got to go out and produce. And you have to produce on that time, you know, from a fundamental dominance of your will, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Benny Cunningham and I go back to, and both of those plays is that, you know, even after the ball game, he said, you know, coach, you know, he said, I know what you're in. I said, no, he said, I was shocked. I said, you know, we hesitated, you know, and you can't hesitate in this league.
Can you assess the season that Miles Garrett has had for you, and what is the outlook for him?
He was on some of those stats pages today too. And, you know, with missing, you know, five games, you know, he was on those things from a production standpoint that's been very productive. And everybody, once again, just because of the stature of the pick, the money you're making, all that stuff is that he's coming off a long way to the point where if he ever wanted to coach, he could do that too. But his knowledge of how things are done and his respectfulness of coming in and earning his time right now, I really perceive, here's something that I would say from starting January 2nd, not 1st, is that you'll see his leadership ability more, but he had to come in and pay his respect to veterans in the room. And I think you'll see even, you know, more leadership from him. He's earned that. He's got a few more things that he has to grow with, but I know his entire offseason will not be a patient one. It'll be one where he is grinding himself to improve, not only physically, but the mental aspect too. Of, it's a different game than the college game. It's just a different game that he had to go through, and he had to suffer through a few of those moments that now his awareness is outstanding. So I'm sure that his production is not as high as he would like it to be, but his fitting in here and his production as a team defensive player has been good.
Fire, do you see in, how much fire do you see in Garrett in terms of him matching that aspect to his talent?
Tremendous fire, and those are one of the things. And really, of all the players that are here, he was the only one I was asked about that, you know, to go get. And, you know, I did so much research behind the scenes from his junior high days to his high school days. It's amazing. I only mentioned who his high school coach was and his link to me and, you know, the colleges and all that kind of stuff is that. And then when I personally had an opportunity of meeting up close and personal the very first time, he's impressive. His pride's impressive, and hopefully yours is too. You know, if you're not a prideful person, you're never going to be a successful person. Somebody is looking to replace your seat that you all are sitting in. And he's a very, very prideful, well-raised young man with that family. And there's a lot of guys that come into the league that have no family background. And they're struggling to learn. They're struggling for discipline and accountability. Not him. But he's extremely prideful, and I will be shocked if it's not immediately visible next year. We all have to stay healthy, okay? And he's done a great job with that. Okay, once he got over that first injury here, and I go back, if you remember what I said, I am shocked when that injury happened on the field that day that he did not break his leg. When a 265-pound man launched onto the back of his leg because he stumbled, it was unbelievable, ugly. And we had to make the kid get off the field. That's how tough he is. He's not a talk, talk, talk tough guy. He's a physically tough guy and a mentally tough guy. So he's the right person to be here, and I look forward for great things from him.
Even though that play was wiped out, which we obviously talked about, what did you just think of his effort on the pick six, and what did he show you?
Pretty athletic. Reminds me of some basketball that he's able to play. And if you've ever, you know, and again, he throws like a quarterback. He dunks like a basketball player. You know, he's got basketball in his family, his brother. But he just looked like an unbelievable athlete. And did you see him run away from everybody else? He ran like a receiver. There's a reason he ran four fives coming out, you know. And so I can't coach those things. He's got them. And we just got to keep on working.
Could you assess Jabril Peppers? I mean, you got a lot of questions throughout the season about him and where you were playing him and whether or not you were maximizing his talents and all that, but just could you assess what you got from him this year and what you hope
he's
to get from him?
He's come light years, and I think it would be better for him to say it to you than me, but, you know, he proved to, and just because other people said that that's not where he should play, who are they? They've never coached in this league. They've never been on my staff. So who are those people? And I laugh and I smile about the fact that he can do a lot more than everybody else thinks he can do. And how far he came in those space plays has made him even better in the box. He got a chance to be in the box, you know, some really all year long, but people only see him back there in the post every, 50% of the time. But he had a chance to make some really good box appearances this past week. And then he took a butt chewing for me once towards the end of the game because he was up the field too much. And I want you to think back on how many times early in the years Derek Kindred was the same way, and he stopped doing that. But he's got to learn through some of those things. Jabril coming off the field before I even got a chance to talk to him, he's telling me what he needs to do. That's how far he's come. And there are some really, really, really dominant personality similarities between him and Miles. From a pride standpoint, he's a very prideful young man. And when you see him out on the field now, he didn't know what to say, how to say it, and from a leadership standpoint now. But he talks the talk and on the field now like a backup middle linebacker. He's had to learn to keep his mouth shut and not say something different than Joe Schobert. That's not easy when you're a vocal person like him. And today it was pretty cool to listen to all that stuff that was going on out there to practice today as he was echoing and saying the same thing that Joe is saying. So he's just scratched the surface. He'll do more next year defensively, offensively, special teams-wise. He's just a good football player.
Do you think you'll see Ben and Le'Veon Bell on Sunday?
I have no idea, tell you the truth. And I've been through so many of these throughout the courses of the year. We prepare for anybody, and we prepare conceptually too. You know, regardless of whether they do or not, their concepts are the same. It's a different person in the concept, but it's the same. Formationally, all that stuff's the same. So we play, and we kind of just block all that out, because if you don't, that becomes an excuse or a distraction. And as the guys have learned around me, I have no tolerance of distractions. You can't be distracted. I can't. They can't.
If Landry's out there, not Ben, does that change how you have to call the game?
No.
Do you want to forget a season like this as soon as you can, or do you want to use it as motivation?
Good. I don't know. If all you guys, you understand the chip that's on my shoulder? It's been there my whole life, and. Forgetfulness is not taking experience into intelligence. And experience like this can be very, very, very foundation setting. One of the better years I thought that I've ever had a chance to coach was my first year as a head coach when we went 3-13 and went to training camp with 49 undrafted free agents because we were $28 million over the cap and had nobody. I signed a contract, and the day after I signed the contract, they cut the team down to 38 players. I'm going, we only have 38 guys? I wish I'd have known that before I signed the contract. And it's one of the better coaching jobs that you end up doing. In here, you can't forget how you structure and do things for any group of young men. And staff-wise, when I walk into the room now, from coaches on the staff, some of the new guys that have ever been with us, and then the players, it's very comforting to see the buy-in and the understanding of how far we come and came defensively, okay, in some areas, and we haven't come far enough yet. So in order to wipe it off, that would be foolish in my respect. It would be foolish because you can't go forward. You repeat. Don't want to repeat, okay? We want to move forward.
How many difference makers do you need to add to your defense for it to be what you want it to be?
And, everybody asks me all the time from a measurable standpoint, from an analytical standpoint, and I'm saying this not to be overly funny. I always have to smile. People say, what kind of players do you like, Coach? They want me to have all these height, weights, and I said, I like good football players. I like good players. Let's see. Anybody like Joe Schobert? No, I remember what you've written about him before we remember, because I have all access to all that too, because of what it was written about him when he was a rookie last year. What about Coley? I know one. What about Burgess? They come in all sizes and shapes, okay? You know, Blaine Bishop just went in the Tennessee Hall of Fame. And when he got off the bus, I'm trying to say, why did we even think about drafting your little bow-legged rear end? I almost said something bad, okay? And then all of a sudden he plays all those years, goes to all those Pro Bowls, and now he's in the State of Tennessee Hall of Fame. What we need to do is bring in as many good people as we can and let it compete. Don't make irrational decisions. Let competition make the decisions. Best man play. And then when you have, you can never have enough good players. And then let the best player play, and the players in the locker room recognize that. When the players in the locker room see us, we, or decision makers do things ignorantly that don't have the best interests of the locker room first, you got to fight through that. And this is a good group of young men. They I don't know that I've been as hard anywhere in my life as I have been here on culture, and not one of them has pushed back. Not one. And that's a tribute to them. Not a tribute to the, you know, what we do, why we do. It's a tribute to those young men wanting to do whatever it takes to get better.
What's the difference between 1-15 and 0-16 as far as maybe the stigma or lasting effect that a winless season?
Here's what this could be a great answer, and probably one that everybody, again, would love to just rip my tail about. That sounds analytical to me once you ask somebody about that. 1-15, 0-16, let me see, that's one. That's a one-game difference. So what do you want me to answer?
Could have a psychological.
Doesn't make any difference. Okay, we're out to win every single second of every play. We look to win every play. Okay, and all that, we have to win every single play, and we have to control, and I have to control what I've been put in charge of. And so I don't reflect on those things. It's somebody else that reflects on.
Mike Tomlin said earlier this week he would not disrespect any of you guys by showing empathy or a feeling like that.
I like that. Same way.
How have your peers treated you this year? I
mean, how they?
Yeah.
They have, or?
How have they been to you guys? Are they looking down on you? Are they laughing? Or?
You know, I really don't know in that respect. I do know this, that if you ever watched me post game, I'm not looking to shake people's hand, win or lose. Period. That's not what I mean. At this level, it's you got to understand that part of it. I do remember, you know, after that opening game, their offensive line coach and some of the things he had to make sure that he wanted me to hear, okay, about us in a private way. And there's been so many coaches, you know, there was five guys on the Chicago Bears staff that, you know, come and grabbed a hold of me because I just go off the field to make sure that they understand about how hard these guys play and how well they played and how they look at them as a pair compared to other teams that they played against. And from our side of the ball, that's complimentary things, and I take that with a grain of salt.
Why do you like what Mike said about not showing
up? I didn't even know that until you said that right now, but I believe this, is that, you know, every single snap as a pro football coach and a player, you're looking to win. And you don't feel sorry for those kind of things. That's what this business is about. It's a production business, okay? A great game, a fun game, but it's a production business. And we're not looking for anybody to feel sorry, nor are we looking for anybody to pat us on the back. And, you know, and again, as we finish up here this year, I appreciate all you guys, okay, all the things that we've done and throughout the course of the year. And I guess I'll see it again. When is it again that I have to do this? Is that June? Yeah, probably be June again. But, you know, I enjoyed everything of it. I really like living in Cleveland. I really like the people of Cleveland. They're very similar to my upbringing in the rural area of Missouri. And I do like the pridefulness of the people here. And once again, I came up here, started coming up here a long, long, long time ago when Marty Schottenheimer was the head coach and Belichick was the head coach, and it was a fist fight in a phone booth for 3 hours, okay, to play those teams. And we desperately, and I desperately, that's the picture, if you want to talk about picture that I have in my mind, is some of the same pictures I want these guys to experience of when I first came back here in the late 80s and 90s and was hit with batteries and dog biscuits and dog bones and everything coming out of the crowd. And I appreciate you guys, too, and I'll see you again. What year will it be? 2018. All right.